Boy, it would be good if we could just, when the time comes, run off and do that. That's why we got to have the fight now. And you are indeed having this conversation and trying to make changes now. So, but truly, Drew, if they ever diagnose you with cancer, I don't know if you're going to have the resources to just hop on a plane and go down
Well,
to the.
bottom line is I'm not going into hospital. I would not go into hospital for the treatment.
And
I would.
furthermore, I would submit to you that because there is no South American European or economic government, right? Where exactly in the rainforest are you going to go? You going to go to Colombia and fight through the FARC, or are you going to go over to such and such country and fight through the guerrilla Sandinistas, or are you going to go over to this
Well,
one? You know what I'm
as
saying? What
far
I'm
as I
saying is
know,
this. What I'm
Madagascar
saying
doesn't
is
have that
it's
issue, so.
ironic. It's ironic that, if you were to try and live in that free world where they don't have all this same currency, economic union stuff, there's people who take the mayors of cities and execute them in the streets. The drug gangs. I'm just saying, there's going
No,
to be
I know what
some
you're
kind of
saying.
power structure, and if it is a centralized government that recognizes and protects to some extent, right? Because this beautiful, wonderful country of ours has not done such a great job on all fronts of protecting, its charges, whether that be its citizens, its slaves, or its, I don't know, what would you call the Native American population?
Indigenous.
Indigenous? In the way? Is that Latin for in the way?
I'd say right now it's invisible, unfortunately. But oh, and I just wanted to also mention one of the most overlooked news stories, except for KKFI and a few others. I think I'm sure Jake is well versed. I know you are. How to create a modern day Rome, also known as Michigan with the emergency manager law. I don't know if you've heard of what's happened lately.
Right, not lately, but I know that the new city manager or whatever that they appointed, that the governor appointed, has like he's force fed some renegotiations of civil contracts, right?
Well,
Of labor
not just that,
contracts.
but the people of Michigan literally were passed a referendum and overturned it. And they found a loophole under the Constitution where if it's something, Jake, you might know more about the semantics of this. It's something to the effect of, I think, if you put a budget for it or something, or in the general budget, they can't just overturn it by referendum now. They basically forced it on people a second time when people said, no, we're not interested. And I gather that's quite a number of both Democrats and Republicans and independents who said no to this because, hey, it's people and it's a referendum for crying out loud. But yeah, that's one of the things. I'm afraid Detroit's going to end up, quite frankly, no one's made the obvious joke except for maybe me. I haven't seen it, read anyone else made the reference to them becoming OCP. If you remember RoboCop 2,
I have no idea what that is.
RoboCop 2 was basically about the city of Detroit being owned by a corporation where people were given like apartments and if they wanted to like and that would equal like one vote or something, and he said if you want more votes you can have shares. I mean, it may not be something as drastic as that, but it's strangely resembling something out of a movie you would think out of this world that you'd never expect to happen. And I don't know if you know the thing about the emergency manager law specifically, but they can only take over if, the budgets end up screwed up. So, of course, the governor is figuring everything he can to mess around with Detroit's budget, so he put him into bankruptcy, so his appointed liaison, the Caesar of Michigan.
So then your contention by the derision that you point all this out is what? That
It's
Detroit
wrong.
should work their own problem out?
It's become Rome.
I'm asking you, outside of that analogy, and that kind of brings to mind for us something. But when you say it's Rome, it ain't Rome. Like, when you say Rome, I'm thinking gladiators walking the streets and people being snatched up and the king going, and live or die, live or die. But what you're talking about is something more specific. So let's get into that a little bit. Because here's what I'm trying to get to, right? Okay.
Yeah.
We know that the city of Detroit, through a number of reasons, right, is in a world of hurt.
Mm-hmm,
They've had mayors and others within their political structure that have looted the city, right?
Mm-hmm.
They've
had
all this kind of stuff going on.
Gutting the skyscrapers and all that, yeah.
Now they have found themselves bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
And they have employees, they have pensions, they have whatever properties, this art that they're talking about, selling or not selling and all this stuff. And I guess, what do you do if you're the governor of that city? Do you just sit there and wait until the people of that city start coming and going, they don't even have water where we are? Can you truck in water? Because the city has so inadequately handled things that we are, like, stuck.
The problem is that these assets, they're using the taking advantage of the emergency manager law to basically take whatever's around that's a public asset that isn't nailed down, so to speak, and sell it off.
Okay, what is it that they are supposed to do? That's the question. What are you supposed to do now that we've had, you know, the Kwame Kilpatricks of the world take the money and spend it on, you know, hookers and diamonds?
Well, for one, I think you have to look more. You need to line item the thing. I mean, when I say line item, I don't mean veto. I mean, you need to look over every line item and see what needs to be cut and give it a really hard look and have an auditor brought in, a very strict auditor, someone on the level of, from what I've heard, she actually did a fairly good job. Maybe I'm wrong, but like Claire McCaskill.
Okay, but hold off on that thought, okay? I'm not disagreeing with that as an option.
Yeah.
But don't you think they've done that in some respect? I mean, there have been no shortage of people saying, this is what you got to do. You got to change the way you're doing this thing, because if you don't change the way you're doing this thing, this is going to continue to be a problem, and that's where they are. They are in a, like, literal crisis at this moment, is the word that is being used.
I'm not disagreeing with you, and maybe they've tried the auditing thing, but I know that there are other ideas around that I believe would show promise for Detroit.
Okay,
you've got all these empty skyscrapers. For one, I think let's get an organic market. Turn these things into greenhouses. Start pumping out food.
Okay, so what you do, Drew, you cannot, I'm going to tell you this with certainty, okay, especially from somebody who don't like the centralized government of the European Economic Union, right? You cannot just walk up in there. Who is going to walk up in there and require that these skyscrapers be turned into urban vertical farms? I'm all for that. I am all for that. When I first heard that concept 5, 6, 7 years ago, here on this show, I think it was, I can't remember the cat's name now, but it called up and talked about it, and I looked it up, and I was like, whoa, that is the idea. I love that idea. But you can't force it.
No, I'm not saying force it, but I'm saying present it as even an idea.
Presented as an idea in a place where the mayor, and I believe it was more than one mayor, right?
Yeah.
That took the city to the cleaners. If that is the political climate, if that's the the political entity that you're working with, right? That's the city council you're working with. The city council that sat there year after year as this stuff happened, you're now asking that city council to come up with or to fund, use this idea and make it happen. That ain't gonna happen. This is the problem that we have right now. It's like, okay, now you're at this point where it's like the people who have broke it can't fix it because they're the ones that broke it. And they're not going to change their tune.
The problem I ultimately have with, well,
I mean, in a sense, in a sense, this is not entirely unlike, and please don't jump all over me, people. This is not entirely unlike the governor, I mean, you know, the president sending in the National Guard to the state of Mississippi to integrate the schools. Right?
Oh, I thought you were going to say New Orleans. Okay, I got you.
This is, you people have lost your damn minds.
See, but
you people have gone off the deep end, and we got to get you back together. Because there are people in Detroit right now who would be great as a mayor and would be great in the city council and would be great in doing these things and making the stuff that you're talking about happen. But the people who have found themselves in power through years and years of patronage or whatever, above or under the board relationships have found themselves in power. Those ain't the people that are going to solve this problem.
Well,
so it has to be a shock to the system, and the governor is the next one. I mean, if it's not the governor, who, at the president? My God, can you imagine Obama sending somebody in to straighten out Detroit?
Well,
people who don't even like Detroit because it's a quote-unquote chocolate city would be like, you can't take over a city.
I just want to make it clear we're talking about Detroit and we are not talking about the rest of the cities in Michigan, because this guy has tampered with budgets and stuff to push these people into financial insolvency to bring in emergency management. I'm not talking about Detroit.
So you're saying that the governor has manipulated the budgets?
Yes, for other cities
to
push them into insolvency, to basically
now,
get them
I have
them
not
into
followed
that.
This case.
I'm not talking about Detroit.
Closely.
I just want to clarify the government, but the governor isn't doing this all with good intentions. I just want to make that clear. As far as Detroit, my concern, with Detroit is in doing this. If we privatize things like water, we've seen how badly this has turned out before. When you privatize the water,
and is
system.
That the suggestion that is going out there right now to privatize the water?
Well, considering the fact that everything
I'm saying you're arguing against that
is nailed down as an asset, and I'd heard something talked about being done with the water system around Detroit, so it wouldn't surprise me in the least. So I would hope we would approach a privatization aspect of public services, especially ones as much needed as water, with much trepidation. We've seen the harm that it's done in places like South America and all these, and I know we're talking about America, but I wouldn't put it past them to offer as bad a service up here as has been offered down there when stuff has been privatized for water. So I'm just saying we should approach this thing with trepidation. And as far as I got the impression with these emergency managers, they're kind of outside the city. I could be wrong in that respect, but
they're outside of the city, meaning they're not part of the city government. Yes,
I believe that's correct. Not even part of the city government, not part of the city of Detroit. I've got an impression. I mean that these people kind of just come in and they're not really members of the community. I might be wrong, but you know, just looking at this law and people's backlash, I'm willing to put forth the assertion that it's not people who see truly are looking at the concerns of the community, at least generally. So I mean, this is I think if they would see someone who came out with great ideas and who's put in that position and start seeing some movement, people wouldn't have been as precautionary. I mean, like, I was watching a show talking about, amazingly enough, there are people that are coming into Detroit and they're doing some really neat stuff. Some of this is being, like, these restaurants being built, I don't know if one was a farm. I can't remember. It was a story on Al Jazeera's The Stream. They were talking about it. With some really neat stuff. And people were building and kind of helping each other and getting each other back on their feet. I mean, it was really kind of miraculous. I'm getting the impression it's not those people who are being put in the emergency manager position is the thing.
I don't know, what's the pool of emergency city managers that you can look at? You know what I'm saying?
Well, when you say, well, what's the tool, what's
the
they
pool?
Can do? Or?
What's the pool of people that
pool.
You're looking at? You're
oh,
saying
sorry,
this guy
sorry. I thought you
versus
said tool.
How many city managers have there been? I really don't.
Well, I know there's at least been one before this, not in Detroit, but in another city.
So what happened with this? They had a mayor in Detroit that was there for a year. What's up with that?
Now, that one I had.
Ken Cockrell.
Oh, yeah. I remember this guy got elected in.
But he go like, man, I didn't know this was what y'all talking about. I'm out of here.
Yeah, I remember hearing
I
about
quit.
This guy getting elected in, and then the emergency manager thing kind of came in, and the guy just felt totally helpless, and his hands were tied.
So he resigned in protest?
I don't know if he resigned.
Coleman Young.
Resigned, or just kind of sitting there taking his salary, because I don't know the specifics of that part of the law, if the mayor still gets his salary when the emergency manager goes in.
Here we go, Kilpatrick. All right, here we go. We ready? You ready? Here we go.
Yeah.
Here we go. The guy's name was, boy, they just skipped right over that dude. They sure did. Apparently, he wasn't there for very long, and they skipped over the mayor's impacts or the different mayors and what they did to bring it to where it is. This is a big, long story through the Detroit Free Press, and I will... I'll try to tweet this out in just a moment. I mentioned that I'm tweeting now. I got to tweet something. So now I got something to tweet. And people can look at this long article about Detroit and how it got to where it is. Because I think it is important, and I can't read it to you all right away. But it goes into, you know, again, it's that, like I was saying, the what-if moments that over a 50-year period could have made a difference. I was reading through this thing while you were talking. Yeah, it's like over five decades, there were many if-only moments. You know, if the mayors Kavanaugh and Gibbs had cut the workforce in the 60s and 70s, if the mayor in the 80s hadn't added 1,100 employees to the city when they were still losing population, but they still had plenty of money because they had General Motors, right? And then, you know, there was just a lot of different things that were going on to get them where they got, you know what I'm saying?
Mm.
And as I said before, as all of this was happening, and this has always been a problem of mine, okay? We have in this country, in this world, right?
Mm-hmm.
Really, in this world, we have a problem of, and that's kind of what this country was founded on, right? The idea of, what do you call it? Not legacy, but inherited,
well,
you know, nobility. I'm not even talking about wealth. I'm talking about the actual political leadership. We have in this country, nay, in this city.
Well, nay, in
people,
corporate leadership, too.
Corporate leadership is a different ball of wax. I agree with you, and there's things we can do there. And there's I can think of pluses and minuses for that one. But definitely within our cities, we have a really bad habit of electing people based on who their dad is and their families. These family political dynasties are, and I could name 1, 2, 3. I could name like 4 or 5 of them right off the top of my head in this local area.
You got a better history than I do.
When you start talking about the Rizzos and the where are those other families around here that have been around, the Curls, the Blands, that's on the east side of town, and then you got your Rizzos down in the northeast. Were you talking about families? Look at the cat that was governor that really kind of just got it because his father was a big time congressman, Blunt, right? Look at your Carnahans, right?
Yeah,
we have families
that
are built on in politics to the point where we kind of go like, well, you know, I mean. Like my guy in Northeast Johnson County, Northeast Johnson County, Mike Slattery is the Democrat in the thing, or I don't know, maybe he used to be, and I just missed a couple of elections. I don't even know anymore. But what I'm saying is, he showed up at my door one day saying he wanted to be the next guy, and I was like, that name sounds familiar. He's like, yeah, my dad's something else up in Congress and been up there in Washington, D.C. But I really, you know, I've always maintained close ties here at home, and I really want to support you and what you believe in. And I'm like going, I don't know you, dude. I don't know you. You don't know me. And although I didn't, you know, really know the guy before him, at least I knew that guy lived around here. You know what I'm saying? I knew that he knew what I am talking about when I say, you know, a couple years ago when they did that one thing and it caused this problem, he understands what I'm talking about. He wasn't living in Washington, D.C., and before that going to Georgetown schools and blah, 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 blah. And I got nothing against all those things other than you are the guy that now shows up and says, I'm your local guy, like Al Gore in Tennessee, right? Al Gore grew up in Washington, D.C. He's not from Tennessee. You know what I'm saying? George Bush is not from Texas.
Oh, we know he's a Connecticut. You know, he was a Connecticut.
Well, I don't even mean like 50 years ago his dad moved there. I'm talking about while you were a Texan, you lived all these other places
and did things
and made your money. But you come here and you go like, I'm one of you guys because we've always been here. Well, at least your company has always been here, your estate. All I'm saying is that we can do better than to keep electing the same people over and over and over again. I mean, Rand Paul is there because of who his dad is.
I'll roll
that back a little bit because I don't know. Yeah, he established himself living there before. It's not like he moved there to do it. Look, it's one of those things, it's kind of like racism, right? I can show you racism by the numbers, even if I can't ask that guy to, you know, have you ever used the N-word? Well, no, I would never do such a thing. But the numbers can show me that there is something happening here that's real, so that we need to address. Not whether you use this word or that word. Same thing with these family dynasties. You know, this political...
Kennedys.
Yeah, all of them, man. We don't need to keep on going back to the same people because that has its own inherent, you know, privilege built into it. I mean, at a point, you step up to the table. Look, that's how that dude Scott Brown won Massachusetts because the other woman didn't have enough sense to go, you know, I may be a Kennedy, but I'm still a regular person. She just was like, hey, man, I'm a Kennedy.
I'm going to stand up and vote.
You better recognize. Did you see who my last name is? Come on. I mean, if that's the attitude that you bring to it that blatant, then you don't get elected. But if you stand up and you go, you know, you can say in Spanish that my name is George Bush, George P. Bush. And I'm not like my family. They have generations of wealth and power. But I, like you, am a brown skin. Hispanic, Latino, my Latina brothers and sisters, we must take this country back for far too long. The halls of power have been held by people who are not in touch with us, you and me, George Bush. That doesn't make any damn sense, but that's being floated. Right now in Texas, George P. Bush, which this is, I'm not clairvoyant, but I told you this was going to happen.
Oh, wait,
back
wait,
in 2004.
We're talking, oh, geez, we're
back in
Prescott.
2004, when George P. Bush's son, nephew, or I'm sorry, George W. Bush's nephew, George P. Bush, gave a speech introducing him, I said, wow, that kid is Latino, and his name is George Bush. They're going to throw him out in front of the Latinos and say, stick with us, because we got you covered. Now, I am, of course, pouring all sorts of cynicism into how I look at the Bushes and assuming that, you know, that they would quote-unquote assign one of their kids to go out and marry a Latino so that they could have the Latino vote cornered. That may be incredibly cynical on my part. But I will tell you that kings and queens have done these sorts of things. Jake, in his history lesson earlier about the King of England, talking about I'm the King of France and the King of Dutch and I'm the King of the world.
Well, you heard the story.
Vatican.
And the treasure of the Vatican. It's like he just claimed. Hold on. Did he really say that?
Yeah.
That one's crazy. And I'll tell you what, that one's crazy. The English don't even acknowledge the Catholic Church. They're like, I don't listen to no Pope. I get divorced when I want a divorce, and you're standing on my bank account. That's what he's saying. I am the king of that bank account over there. Even though I don't acknowledge the Pope who's in charge of it. But
that's why Godfather 3 is my favorite. Everybody gives it crap.
Right.
That's the most realistic.
It's the most realistic, right. But that's the thing, see, is that we got these dynasties going on and we allow this stuff to keep on keeping on, and then they can just interchange. They send the guy. It's scary to think that there's that much cynicism in the real world today. But you got to have a little bit of cynicism to understand how you're being played, because they are playing you. This much we know.
Well, look at when you said that you do know who at one time Al Gore's daughter married, right?
No.
I think her name was Katrina or Karina Gore, married one of the Schiffs.
Of the Schiffs?
Yeah, the Schiff family. Schiff's another one of those wealthy, I think they're a banking family, if I'm not mistaken. Am I correct, Jake?
The only thing that comes to mind is the prosecuting attorney on Law & Order.
Oh, yeah, but, yeah.
But I think that's a little head nod to the group you're talking about.
Yeah, there's supposed to be another one of the rich families like the Warburtons and the Rothschilds.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, they all interbreed. I wouldn't be surprised if some of these people consider the females of their clan nothing more than broodmares.
Right. Well.
I'll use that ancient term. I think it fits for some of them and their mentality.
Oh, Drew, you don't follow, man. No, that's not how they look at their women, man. Their women are part of the deal now. It's not like, I mean, that's the thing that's the other part of the dynamic. And we got another caller trying to get in here, and
yeah.
I know he's on the line. So, is that you again, Brother Love?
Yes, this is me.
All right. I wasn't sure if I recognized the number or not. But I know you can hold on to your thought because you that kind of guy. But here's the thing is here's the other dynamic that has been at play over the centuries, right? Those very people who have maintained control, because I am 100% in line with you, Jake, that money has always found a way to insinuate itself into the halls of power, because even if you are defeated, if you're rich, you know, you can show up to the new guy and be like, all right, look, man, I know you won, but listen, I already got a system running. As long as we kick it up to you, you don't mind. I don't mind. I don't care if I gotta give it to King George or if I gotta give it to King Philippe or whoever won the war or whoever is, you know, whether Lord Buckingham decided to off Lord Earl Grey. You know what I'm saying? These, I'm sure,
different kind of
different
tea party
deals, right? But you know what I mean. That when it ultimately comes down, that's what it that it always shakes down to. Look, okay, are you going to maintain my cut? If I get to still be the guy in charge of this region, I really don't care what color stripe you want me to wear. I don't care what language you want me to talk. I don't care if we're dealing in francs, marks, or euros. As long as I get to be the guy that everybody kisses a ring. And I understand that they are only going to kiss my ring if you're not in the room. And if you're in the room, they'll kiss your ring and I'll kiss your ring. But hey, you're only one guy. You can only be so many places. So most of the time, I'm going to be the king of the castle.
Look
and
up,
I'm okay with that.
You should look up... The jewelers, too. Same idea with West Africa way back in the past with the gold trade. They were the ones who basically set up the system. The king got the got some of the money, but the jewelers ultimately ran things.
The who?
The jewelers. They're the ones with all the money. It's spelled D-Y-U-L-A-S.
Okay, I was trying to get you to say that very clearly because it was sure as hell sounding like you were saying the Jews. And I do not want to have that damn conversation.
No. It's pronounced weirdly because of the spelling and all that.
That's that whole New World Order thing. Doula?
Jula.
Jula, okay. Because a doula is the people that help you birth, right? You know what they call them birthing people?
They call them that.
Yeah, okay. All right. Brother Love, what's happening? Drew, I'm going to let you slide, man. All righty. Brother Love, what you know?
Yeah, Queen Elizabeth was cousin to the Tsar and the Kaiser.
Right. All them people are connected.
Yeah. All of them were cousins, just like King George. That's why they assassinated him, because they wanted the reins of power.
Right, and that's why I say it's important that you know, when that's why I have the cynicism that I have about, like, George P. Bush. It's like, or even George W. Bush. Like, the whole narrative about him being this rip-roaring drunk and then he becomes a conservative Christian, right about the time that the Republican Party, like, really merged with the conservative Christians, doesn't really surprise me, or doesn't, to me... That smacks of engineered reality, especially when you consider that it didn't change, like, his policies. It's not like, oh, my God, I found Jesus. Now let me give everything to the poor. That was not on his agenda.
Yeah, I mean, that's not part of the church anymore.
You're right about that.
It's not part of the church anymore. I see that. They don't have humanitarianism. Doesn't have anything to do with Christianity anymore. They said, take the power away from the church, give it to the hospitals or whatever. It reminds me of old England.
Right.
That's exactly what they want.
Right. And it takes radical changes to make changes. That's why I'm looking at this Pope that we have now, and I'm waiting for him to get sick. You brought up the Godfather 3.
Right.
I'm just waiting for... I mean, we saw this. I think we saw this with John Paul I. Was that which one was it that was, like, dead in a year?
The first. Yeah, 33 days or something. Like
yeah,
that.
Just like,
Jesus,
man, how...
Like, how dare you?
Because to me, that's like...
these people to die in the streets. I mean, it's the French Revolution all over again. Kill all the old people. Get rid of all these people that are non-productive. That's how it is.
Yeah.
Have a nice night.
All right now.
Oh yeah, and all these people who want to succeed from the United States, it sounds like North and South. And then this, another thing, this war on drugs, all it does is derail Reconstruction. It derails it. This fake war on drugs, you know, that's what it's designed.
Yeah, have you heard that? That gal, I can't think of her name now, man, Michelle something. She's a professor out of somewhere in Ohio, I think, and she's got a I know I played like a little bit of her talking about the new Jim Crow and how all this war on drug laws has led to
a massive
enslavement, a massive incarceration or re-enslavement of people
genocide, is just a whole lost generation.
Right. And there are changes, and see, those are lever moments, right? Because when you, like, I think about my family, right? Like, I am so thankful to be where I am today. You know, my kids are soon will be 9, 10 and 16. We've had conversation. We've had, you know, if I die today, I feel like not they're in a good place or they where I want them to be, but they're on the track. They got a chance. My kids at 8 and 9 years old know not to trust these mutterbutters to come talking about I'm here to help. You know, they have a healthy cynicism. I try to put that in them. Imagine, I can't imagine. I'm terrified. I was terrified to imagine. I'm less so now because I'm older, they're older, whatever. But imagine not being able to put any of those thoughts into my kid's head.
Exactly.
Imagine if what instead they saw was like, you know, once a week or every month or whatever, we go visit daddy in prison. How would that change who they are? I would submit that if I wasn't there and my wife was having to deal with, you know, an absent father off in prison, that they probably wouldn't be doing the Boy Scouts that they do, or they wouldn't be involved in the student government or the extracurricular activity here or this or that, because she'd be stretched thin trying to do what the two of us already stretched thin are doing. So that's a lever moment when you have a drug law that says, well, hey, we caught you with, what did we determine that the little ounce thing is? The 6 grams or whatever it is? I don't know.
Yeah, you did.
I will never be caught on tape saying, hey, Your Honor, I don't know nothing about that. Yeah, you do right here. You were describing how to break it down. No, but seriously, I mean, whatever it is, that little amount can, like, change that whole family's life. And then you go, well, he shouldn't have been doing that. Well, maybe he shouldn't have been. Or maybe we shouldn't be worrying about what he's doing, because wasn't nobody talking to you about you having a 12-pack every night when you go home from work or whatever your
we
thing
is. We have to
is.
Worry about the children.
Wasn't nobody talking about
generation.
You sitting in front of the TV
you
for
know,
7 hours.
I've got a brand new truck. I've got a brand new convertible Mustang and another damn car on Dubs. It's like I don't. It's not like I don't have a life, but I'm worried about the future. Do you? I'm worried about tomorrow. I'm worried about the children because they are our future. I hear these fools say things. I'm like, boy, you don't have none of the things that I have in life. You hear me? You're jealous because of my advancement in civil rights. Do you hear what I'm saying? By using my mind and being a critical thinker. But and all my kids graduated, all my kids in college. You hear what I'm saying? But like I'm saying, I worry about the future. I worry about my grandkids that aren't even here on Earth yet. That's how I am. You have a nice night, brother.
All right, now.
Have a good one.
All right. He keeps saying that like he ain't going to call back. If you want to join the conversation, you got about 20 minutes to do it, so pick it up, 816-931-5534. Then we're going to slip into a suicide and I got a feeling Jake's going to try to murder Christmas again. So what's happening, Jake? You're over there, like, deeply engrossed in that.
Oh, my God. I'm just running social media right and left.
See, I need to, I tweet, and I can't even tell people where to follow. What is my Twitter? I need to get me one to set up to sound like that. Then I think I would tweet more. Because if that sound was going off in my pocket all the time, you know what I mean? You'd be like, hey.
We get you some old school Rockin' Robin.
My Twitter tweet is Michael T. Is that right? Or is it just empty look. Justice? I right seriously here. Don't know.
Open up my Bluebird. My Bluebird comes calling, and it says, I think it's Michael T. Justice. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Oh, there it is, me. I am Michael T. Justice,
you and
at Michael T. Justice.
You and the Naughty Show followed me on the same day.
Oh, really? The Naughty Show?
It's a long story.
I'm going to have to check that one out.
But now back to what Brother Love was saying. You know, my 93-year-old grandma died in November also. And, yeah, when it comes to the war on drugs, you know, so much of my current perspective is filtered through her being right on the cusp of this great change we're all living through, and with her ability to share, you know, with me, her life. You know, she was 21 before Pearl Harbor happened. She only ate raw organic foods all the time. You know, she can describe in depth all night long the first time she ever tried Dr. Pepper because it actually had cocaine in it.
Oh, man.
You know, she went from, you
know, I remember drinking that and man, all of a sudden.
Right. Yeah, she, you know.
Right, I'm going to get you. I done transferred
they square danced all night. So, yeah, this this war on drugs was.
Sorry, big dog. Call me back, man.
The drugs came first. The war came second. But, you know, it's through our elders that we have this perspective, and you know, the war on drugs, you know, Brother Love's not incorrect, but this is more socioeconomic than race anymore. Race just used to be an excuse that was prevalent.
Right. I was going to say, it was always more socioeconomic than racial.
Right.
I mean, the majority of the slaveholders, right, held
the first slaveholder
lots
was
of
black.
Slaves, not
yeah. You know, Amistad. You know, these there weren't white people in Africa putting them on the boats. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So slavery is a mindset. You know, servitude comes in many forms, and race is one label on it. But you know, I forgot what I was even saying.
No, I'm with you. Big Dog, you call back. What's happening, sir? I'm trying to get you
hey,
in
man.
There.
Yeah, it took like twice to get caught up in the web there.
Yeah, this thing, it's... I pushed the wrong button that one time. I know I saw you go off into
good.
The ether. So what's happening?
Well, I kind of want to address something that we're talking about, the Obamacare healthcare issue and whatnot. I'm not for the mandate or the penalties, okay? Because when this first started happening, there were states that were voting saying they didn't want federal involvement in health care. I believe Missouri voted almost like 87% said no to Obamacare.
Wait a minute, voted 87% in what election or what?
Against the federal mandate of Obamacare.
Well, explain what you're referencing. What vote? Like, not a vote of the people.
Hang on just a minute.
Was there a referendum on the ballot specifically about?
I just pulled up, got had a phone call to take care of. I haven't seen anybody. Alrighty. Apparently there's something going on in Raytown.
Ray Tucky.
Yeah. But anyway, and then I hear Brother Love say that these people that speak out against the healthcare issue is against the civil rights advancement of healthcare and of black people is what I'm got from him. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, what about those people that don't want the healthcare, don't want to be mandated into buying healthcare, and don't want to pay the penalties, the tax, by the way, which they confirm now is a tax. So I'm sitting here thinking, how is it that there is hatred of civil advancement when my own ability to choose, my own civil rights are being trampled on?
And what Hello? Is your civil right that's being trampled on?
My individual right to say no to something mandated by the government that's not supposed to be mandating issues, i.e. healthcare.
Okay. Well,
so how is it that somebody that, now, I want everybody to have some sort of fallback system or healthcare system to where they can go get their children, you know, checked out.
Right,
whatever,
that's what we're trying to,
whatever.
That's what we're trying to address
and deal
with.
I don't want
the
mandate and I don't want the penalties, and what's wrong with that?
Okay, so what do you want to do? Because that's the question on the floor, right, is we have an issue, right, so we got to deal with it. Here's a way to deal with it. You like it, you don't like it, you vote up or down, it gets voted in, however it got voted in, and then now we have spent these 3 or 4 years. I mean, when did this thing get it got voted in 2010, right? Like early 2010?
Well, you know, that's
no, the 2010 elections were like kind of touted as against it. So whatever it's been 4 years, 3 years, 2 years, whatever it's been, it's gone through a political process. It was enacted as a law, and now we've spent 30 or more votes trying to undo it. So the question now is not, at least for me, is not so much like whether we do this thing or not, but how do we do this thing? And digging the heels in, fighting against it, doesn't help at this point.
Let's just all get sick.
Okay. Well, no, the thing I'm saying is kill the mandate. Okay. If government wants to go ahead and run their program and have health insurance, fine. Kill the mandate. Kill the penalties. When I got very ill about 2 months ago, I went to Truman Medical Center.
I would be okay for Social Security. Well,
let me finish, please.
Go ahead, Big Dog.
I went to Truman Medical Center, and I had to fill out information, paperwork, income, all that stuff, so they put me on a sliding scale of what I would pay. And that is exactly what Obamacare is doing. It's already in place, but the only difference is the mandate and the penalty. Let's get rid of those two items, and you have my full support.
They had that opportunity has come and passed in several occasions. They've had elections and votes and amendments and you know, shutdowns and everything. I mean, I can't think of what else they could do to make that what you're saying happen. But that's not where we are now. We have a law printed in the Federal Register. So now the question is, what do we do from here?
Well, let's just put it to you this way. That law that was passed was not a constituent-oriented passing. It was done on the heels of whatever didn't show up to vote.
Right. Every law
passed,
is the case
illegally.
But your opinion
is
not what's at issue
here.
And
the tax, according to the Constitution or to the federal courts, the tax is okay because, or the penalty is okay because it's considered a tax.
Okay, whatever you have issue with, okay, it's not about whether or not you agree with it or not. In your opinion, it was passed illegally. That has been argued. That has been dealt with. It's gone through the Supreme Court. You know, we've had these issues dealt with, right? I would like to think that the president, now that the Supreme Court, is that who sounded off this week on the illegal wiretapping and stuff? When the Supreme Court, wasn't that Supreme Court or was it an appeal court?
Yeah,
I would like to
think
it was an appellate court because they say it gave him time to appeal further, right? But I would like to think, and I may be pie in the sky on this, but I would like to think that if this thing gets pushed all the way up to the Supreme Court and you get Kagan and you get, what's the little short one? The little lady.
Sotomayor?
No, Ginsburg. And you get all these cats together, right? You get 9 justices and you get, like, let's say 7 of them that come out and say, no, you cannot sit here and record every single call that comes in. I would like to think that that's the end of it. They will quit. That they will modify what they do to fit what the Supreme Court has said, not go, well, in my opinion, the Supreme Court's wrong, so screw them. I'm going to come up with a way of undoing what they're doing so that I can make it so. that's not really the way we want to operate our government. And I don't know. You're saying you think that they – you don't agree with how they passed the law, but it's gone all the way to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court has said, well, this is a tax. Well, you didn't like that they called it a tax, but – and even they didn't argue it as a tax. But that's what the Supreme Court said, and here we are. I mean, there were – there was, you know, again, analogous to the process, okay? In 1954, the Supreme Court said that with all deliberate speed, that schools have to be integrated. And
okay, but you don't seem to understand where I'm coming from on this mandate.
No, I do understand where you're coming from. You don't like the mandate.
The
I can understand
keep,
that.
Keep healthcare
hold
in
on.
Place for,
hold
from
on,
the
sir. Hold on, sir.
Get rid of the mandate.
Okay, now
tax.
I'm asking you
to
listen to me.
Back.
I'm asking you, sir, to listen to me. I stopped when you.
All right, I will.
Me.
I'll listen to you.
So
thank you.
When is he hanging up? Okay. I mean, that's all right. So when we had this law passed, that was, you know, that's – at what point do you stop and go, the next thing is at play?
About 100 years ago.
Right. I mean, at some point, I'm all for – you can have the – at the first bill of every session of Congress is a blanket repeal – of the Affordable Health Care Act. And we'll have that vote, and then we'll move forward. But let's not have that vote 30 times.
Well, the
filibusters, government shutdowns?
The word is capitation. Taxing just describes it. You know, these aren't taxes. Taxing can describe what they're doing is capitating. You know, this started in Massachusetts, like Brother Love said, with Mittens Romney. Obamacare isn't Obamacare. You know, I don't know if you've ever tried to write a 2,000-page document, but I'm pretty sure Obama nor Mitt, either one of them wrote it.
It was written by a bunch of lobbyists.
Teams of lobbyists. And if, like, you know, I'm kind of not kidding. Just like Ben always says, that, you know, when people give Obama crap about not being born here, he's like, if you want to take this guy on, that's, you know, there's 100 other things that he needs to deal with before his birth certificate. And it's the same thing, like we were talking about earlier, this, you know, the Duck Dynasties over overshadowing the NDAA stuff. You know, yeah, Obamacare, Mittens Care is unconstitutional. It's a capitation that is taxing. But if we need to right this wrong, that's, you know, we're fighting the icing when we need to, you know, look at the cake pan or something similar. You know, there's so many layers to this thing now that it's like they pop a new one in front of us and we just argue about it. And then they pop a new one in front of us and we argue about that. And pretty soon we've forgotten the whole damn thing's rotten. And that, you know, that giant massive Control-Alt-Delete might be the best solution. We'll never fix Obamacare.
Right. Now comes the next problem. And that is, because, like, you just went way fundamental, right? Because you went deeper than just the healthcare situation. Because, like I said, I don't like this healthcare bill as it stands.
I don't either.
Because it requires that people pay to the same health insurance companies that we were benching and moaning about.
Right. And Medicaid's
ripping people off.
Rot
and
then
we
problems.
Didn't change that.
Medicare's rot with problems. You know, it's... These are all just extra layers on the fact that the system's broken. Healthcare isn't legislated. You know, there's no health, and they really don't care about you.
I mean, there's just so much of it that it's like, and I hate getting into the weeds of it all, because it's like, okay, we've got this system, this thing that we voted on and is passed, and they had elections and they've done all this stuff. So let's see how it will unfold, and let's start making the changes to it, because this is the one we got. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, the framework has been laid out there, and now you're going to have to make the changes, and you have to do the patchworking and all that stuff that you got to do. And you can make the fundamental argument again that, and some have done this. Some have said, listen, Social Security is broken and needs to be fixed. And have argued that we need to do the Control-Alt-Delete thing. Stick to your guns on that argument, and you might win some change, some converts
right.
on that. But trying to undermine it while at the same time, you know what I mean? It's like, I don't know. It just, so much of it seems to be, and I'm not talking about race so much as I'm thinking it's party. I think there's genuine logistical concerns. Like I say, the mandate, I'm not real happy about, only because for me, the reason I don't like the mandate is because it mandates that I dump money into a system that has a way that there are people who make millions and millions of dollars and still people don't get the health care they need.
Right.
And still people get denied an operation or, you know, the insurance won't cover it. I still go to the doctor, right? And this has nothing to do with affordable health care. You know, you talk about your death panels and your this and that and the other thing. I still go to the doctor with my employee-paid health insurance, right? And go in and have to hear back on whether or not they're going to cover this operation or that operation or this course of treatment or that course of treatment. There are indeed death panels, right? Because if I go in there and they say, well, what we'd like to do is to take out your lung and exchange it with another one, I don't think they do that. But you know what I mean? But except that the insurance company considers this to be an experimental surgery.
Right,
and I can't think of the specifics, but I know of a case in particular right now of a friend of a friend that, and I can't remember all the specifics, so I won't even try to go into it, but it's something that she needs done that is not what one would consider experimental, but because they call it experimental, it ain't available.
Right. Well, they are just practicing medicine.
And that is, right.
And they need you to be patient.
But that's a bureaucracy within a corporation, not the government, that's making some decisions about whether somebody gets a certain course of treatment or whatever
right.
that can indeed lead to life and death decisions. So somebody's doing it, and you're telling me that it's not the government that you know, that was the argument against the Obamacare, but really the problem I have with the death panels that they talk about in Obamacare is that they're the same death panels that we have today, and you're mandating that I further encourage them. Now tell me that that's what you're against, and I can come and have common cause with you. But to tell me that I don't want the government deciding, the government ain't going to decide. They're going to have an agent.
Right. They quit deciding a long time ago.
Right. That agent is Blue Cross and Blue Shield or Aetna or whomever your company ends up with. Now, when it becomes an issue of single-payer health care, I don't know that that's necessarily a bad thing. I mean, I know that we have a habit of knee-jerk reaction against things rather than thinking about, and I say we because I know I do it as well, rather than thinking about, okay, what is this trying to solve? And let's actually look at the problem and then let's talk about it from the perspective of solving that problem rather than what's wrong with your idea. Because too often, what's wrong with your idea becomes, oh, it's just another tax and spend liberal. Oh, the Republican idea of health care is die. Well, I'm sure that's not what they're trying to say. It'd be nice if we could get them to say what they're trying to say so that we could talk about that. You know, to tell me that you don't like a mandate, I'm with you. But that still leaves these people, you know, like I said, I got an email this week saying, hi, I'm one of these guys. You keep hearing about all these people who got stuck with higher bills because of Obamacare, and it sucks. But I'm telling you, here, I'm a guy. And I'll read that when I come back. But right now we got the suicide.